Okay, so I was told that we can go. So I used this time to show this slide, who am I, so that we don't spend time on this. As yesterday I tested this presentation with my friend in the hotel, and it became clear that I have too many slides. So I want to focus rather on the second part, which is technical one, than on the kind of introductory part. But before going further, I just want to understand the audience a little bit more. Could those of you who used enterprise VPN, corporate VPN, VPN to connect to your corporate network, could you raise your hands? Okay, so almost everybody. And how many of you, could you also raise hands, those who used actually commercial VPN, the VPN service when you need to pay some money to? Okay. So that was my understanding as well. So also significant amount of people, but not as much. Good. So first, who is Jerry from this title? Jerry is VPN provider with the properties described in the abstract of the presentation. And Jerry is not my employer. Actually, that's also important for me to mention this disclaimer. So that during this talk, I do not represent my current employer. So, because otherwise I would not get permission to have this presentation. Jerry is provider, which VPN provider, which I cooperate quite closely with engineering team. Actually, I had this first kind of experience to talk about, but obviously I discussed with them what I can disclose and what I can't. So all the identification information is prohibited. So I cannot disclose the name, the employees, the customers, and especially kind of limitation which I didn't like but have to agree is that I can't talk about the methods which they use today because of the infrastructure, the VPN still works and functioning in Russia and it's still able to penetrate the Russian firewall. So then that's basically what we already discussed in the first minute. Here still I want to put a difference, to describe a difference between enterprise VPN and personal or consumer commercial VPN. So the second one is used by individuals for the reasons, for different reasons, but those reasons are very different than accessing the corporate network. So an enterprise VPN and personal VPN are quite different in their nature, even if the underlying protocols are the same. So both can use IPsec or OpenVPN, but the infrastructure around is different and the patterns of usage are different. So why consumer VPN is really used? So according to our experience, the most often it is used to bypass geo restrictions. It's, for example, you want to watch some hockey match or play some game which is not available in your country of residence. So then you need to have VPN. And in this case, VPN is used not really for encryption purposes, but like the proxy is used to hide your real IP and to be able to get access to the service. So, but one of the interesting case is bypassing censorship. So accessing blocked websites and services in countries with internet censorship. So like Iran, China, and obviously Russia. There is also some slight deviation about VPN. So again, just think about it when you have this presentation available. You don't really always need VPN, and especially when you are buying the personal VPN as consumer VPN, you're really shifting the trust from your internet service provider to the VPN provider. If it happens in Belgium or in Finland or in Sweden, then I would rather argue that I don't really want to shift the trust from Elisa or Vodafone to the small VPN provider registered in Taiwan or Cayman Islands or whatever, and I would rather trust Elisa. But it's always about shifting on trust. But sometimes, so marketers of VPNs don't like this statement, but it's actually really correct. I personally like it. that's a shift of trust, and that's what this CISA recommendation is about. So, but there are countries where you really need, where really you can't trust local ISPs, in particular because you do want to get access to the resources which they block. And in this case, commercial VPN is a tool to get access to this data needed. Very important to say that it's not a universal solution, and it's not something which works always. In particular, I don't know how to pronounce it correctly, Kwang Myung, most probably, intranet in North Korea. So this is an extreme case. In this case, the state intranet is disconnected physically from internet. There is no connectivity. So if you want to get a connection to the internet, you need to go to specific rooms, special place with this connectivity to internet. So in this case, of course, no VPN can help. But in China, in Russia, and even in Iran, it's not the case. So now let us focus on censorship in Russia. 2026, how does it look from an end-user point of view? So it's pretty simple. You can't access the sites and services which you can access in Belgium. Certain services are slowed down. For example, in Telegram, you can't really talk via Telegram Messenger, but you can still send messages. And sometimes, of course, devices which use block services, IoT, they fail to work properly. So that's how it looks from end-user point of view. So then let us also look into the VPN business perspective, the perspective of VPN provider. What Russian state is doing to basically shut down the service, the services they are providing. It's deplatforming, so they're sending removal requests to different platforms, for example, Apple Store. They block hosting, so if you're a non-Russian legal entity, you can't actually buy VPS hosting service in Russia, which gives away a lot of opportunities for VPN business, the obvious one. So then they're also cutting income streams. You cannot advertise in the Yandex ads, and you can't actually, the card processing for VPN providers is also blocked. So, and of course, marketing challenges. My favorite one, it was kind of creative. So they launched, I believe it was 1 year ago, or a couple of years ago, it was small propaganda campaign, small in terms of time window, because it looks like it wasn't effective and it didn't work. But it was propaganda campaign that, like, if you do use VPN, then your money will be stolen. So basically, an idea was to form a public opinion that VPN are dangerous and shouldn't be used. Obviously, they are blocking VPN providers' websites, and they have also the ban on popularizing VPN services. In the beginning of 2024, there was an exception for the talks like we are having now, but in the end of 2024, this exception is removed. So if you don't want to break Russian law, please leave the room. I can also say that that's the next slide, engineering point of view. I decided to coin this term. I don't know, I have not heard it before, but I believe that it deserves to be called Great Russian Firewall. It's not anymore the toy which it was before 2022. It's now a serious filter on infrastructure, which covers the all the Russia. And all customer traffic goes through this technical measures to combat threats. Customer traffic means if you're connected through a local ASP, then it means that your traffic will go through this device. And those boxes are installed in ISP premises, but the provider personnel, they do not have control over these boxes. They are controlled by the state authorities. Another thing, especially for those who can speak Russian, I recommend to watch this YouTube, that's a link. A bit of brains for the brutal force. Brutal force, I believe here means police force. They are basically probing the internet, testing which services have the VPN in particular, which IPs, so in order to be able to block IP. So that's active probing, that's also known from Great Firewall of China, they use this technique as well. It's important to say that there are different settings for different internet service providers, different regions, and in different types. So it's flexible, it's dynamic. Don't underestimate it. Don't think that this is something you will easily pass by. So then how it looks from VPN provider point of view. So here I just try to depict the simplified architecture of what will you do if you just decided to set up your own VPN node. For example, you have a house in Germany, you have an apartment in Germany, and you have your relatives in Russia or Iran, and you want them to be able to access German internet, basically, the real one. So what you will do, you will just install a VPN node, probably with standard protocols, like IPsec, OpenVPN, WireGuard, whatever, and you will have several clients from your home country, your relatives, your friends, who will access this VPN node. So the blue arrows here is those connections which are controlled by the firewall, the Russian firewall in this example, and which can be obviously blocked by it. Important point, there are not too much traffic usually coming from those clients to VPN nodes because you just have several customers. So, and this is oversimplified architecture of commercial VPN provider. As you can see, it's more complicated. So you have obviously authentication, authorization and accounting, AAA, AAA. You have accounts database. You have a set of nodes to which the clients are connected to. Nodes are probably located in different geographical regions so that the customers can utilize different exit nodes, different exit IPs. There are many customers connecting to them from different countries or different regions, if you're talking about Russia. So in the first example, most probably your relatives are in one or two cities, located in one or two cities. Here the clients are among the distributed in the whole area, in the whole Russia. So they are from Ural till Moscow and Siberia. So, and you expect to have super nodes which actually will deliver to the clients some part of information which is required to connect. So that clients will not have hard-coded IP addresses of those nodes, but they will be, for example, distributed to the clients by super nodes. And all those blue arrows are still, all those blue arrows are still subject to be blocked by the GRF. So they have different attacks, vector attacks. So that's observation. It's very approximate, and this is based on one VPN provider experience. So don't take it to the kind of truth, but that's what we observed. So before 2022, there were no VPN blocks. It was a paradise. Again, maybe there were, but we have not noticed them. 2022, something happened. The war started. And Russian state decided that now it's time to finally block everything which they can block. So and then they started from blocking by DNS names, blocking by IPs. And in 2023, it was clear that DPI started to be used to deep packet inspection. And after that, PPTP, L2TP, OpenVPN, standard OpenVPN, they stopped to work. So in 2025 only, they finally managed to fix the issue with XOR obfuscation. So there is this OpenVPN famous patch called XOR obfuscation. In additional reading, I have link to the article about this. And it actually worked for pretty long time so that the state was not able, the Russian firewall was not able to block it. So and then in 2025, quite recently, the new thing appeared. So it was whitelists, it is whitelists. So it basically means that the users are allowed to connect only to specific IP addresses, usually belonging to the Russian clouds, like Mail.ru cloud, Yandex cloud. And they just simply can't access anything else. Not only CNN.com, but whatever. So usually this is activated for a very limited time during some events, military events, I mean military attacks, also visits of the Mr. Putin himself to the cities. So then they activate this kind of regime. Now let us switch to some real stories about this Jerry. Okay, good. So the first, the strategy: don't try to combat the Russian firewall directly. The goal is to maximize false negatives. So Russian firewall should think that this is a legitimate connection. If it thinks that the connection is illegitimate, or if it thinks that it cannot understand it, this connection will be blocked. So we observe two types of blocks: full block, and no traffic comes to all the ports except 443. And in this case, you can still do something. So basically, in the second case, it looks like that Russian firewall is not really sure that this is the prohibited service, because they also are very keen on it. They are afraid of shutting down some important service. So they do want to have kind of confidence that this is illegitimate service from their point of view. So, and now several stories. The first we faced was SNI based blocking. So you know TLS hello, SNI field, and by analyzing SNI field, you can understand which server we connected to, and that's a very efficient way to block supernodes, for example. By the way, TLS ECH, which is supposed to be the answer for this, Russians also understand it, and they just prohibit TLS ECH and block it. That's my greetings to colleagues from Mozilla who talked about ECH this morning. So DNS-based detection. We had previously, each VPN node had these domain names. I configure a node, several days comes, passes, and it disappears. Yeah, I mean, it blocks. It is blocked. So it looks like that they actually were doing the checks. And of course, there were no reverse DNS. It was only regular DNS. But it didn't help. So if you use DNS, and if this DNS part of DNS name points to the VPN provider, then they will find a way and they will block it. So another one, if you run any standard VPN protocol like OpenVPN, L2TP, something which can be classified as VPN, detected as VPN, then it will also poison your server, and it will be marked as VPN server, and it will be blocked. So you really can't use standard protocols on the servers which are supposed to work in Russia. Then XOR obfuscation, that was a long saga. And it was an evolution. So in the beginning, it was enough to switch ports. Then it was enough to switch obfuscation mask. But then they started to work very efficiently. So several hours, and they detect it, and they stop it. They block it. So, but for the whole year, it was possible to utilize windows of opportunities. Then whitelists I described in general. Very challenging for Jerry and the like, but still possible to go through. So how many minutes do I have?
One more.
Okay. So then regional and operator difference are very important. If you're a VPN provider and you start to get via blocked requests from your support, from your users in remote areas, then be prepared to get the same from the capitals very soon. So that's a recommendation for VPN providers, which I believe we don't cover here because I have less than 1 minute. Important thing, fly under the radar as much as possible. Don't think that if you are detected, if they have found you, then they will go after you. The only way is to fly under the radar to maximize false positives. And that's kind of last, the future is dark slide. So I think that there are two scenarios for Russian internet in future. So the one is most probable for, in my personal opinion. So this is Kwangmyong intranet, so that Russian internet will be totally disconnected from internet. And in this case, it will be end of the game for VPN providers in Russia. for the reasons I described in the case with North Korea. And the slightly better scenario, that it will be Great China's firewall. And in this case, it will just be more sophisticated, more mature. But this Tom and Jerry game will continue, because if there is a connection, then there is a way to penetrate it. So that's it. I hope I managed to keep the time. Thank you.
Test.
Hello, thanks for a very good presentation. I was just wondering how, in these scenarios, how does V2Ray or X-Ray, VLS, and reality protocols would work?
That's exactly the point which I was not allowed to cover. But you are straight to the point.
Okay, we're running out of time, I'm sorry.